broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You'll hear Bruce Pearl, who coached Jabari Parker, of course, in college. You'll hear him on the Wheelhouse today, so make sure you listen to that. Jabari Smith, thank you. Jabari Parker, he did not.
Jabari Parker would have been good if his knees hadn't exploded.
Totally. Knee, major topic in NBA. but yeah, Bruce Pearl will be on the Wheelhouse. That will be fun. Let's talk a little bit about that NBA draft. Obviously, my brain is mush because it is Friday. But we've talked about GMs in Houston a lot over the years. We've been critical. But the bottom line is that both Rafael Stone and Nick Caserio had to walk into situations that were hard. The Texans, that situation kind of speaks for itself. You had Stars exit. You had some odd leadership decisions with Bill O'Brien, would probably be putting it nicely, between the DeAndre Hopkins trade, between some of the contracts given out, the entire situation with Jack Easterby. And then with the Rockets, you have Harden and Westbrook that exit the situation. You have Daryl Morey, obviously, that how much success slash damage he did is certainly up for debate. But you have two GMs now that are trying to pick up the pieces and bring some success to Houston in both of those areas. We know that they both love them some SEC after last night. This was brought on Twitter by, I believe it's Greg Rahan, who is kind of a utility player for the Houston Chronicle. 9 of 12 between the Rockets and Texans in draft picks this year from SEC schools. So we know that both Rafael Stone and Nick Caserio love them some SEC. What are your guys' thoughts on how the two compare, the job that they've done so far? Although, we know it's early on.
You know, I would have picked Nick Caserio. I think both have done a great job. And I do think that Nick Caserio, with, especially now, everything that we knew about what some of the personnel and some of the players within the building were doing, the way he handled the Deshaun Watson situation. I know there were people who wanted more out of the trade for Deshaun Watson, but getting three first-round picks out of Cleveland, especially knowing what we know now about a possible year-long suspension, was great. His draft was really good. I have my questions on some of the guys that he drafted, but obviously, I'm a massive Kenyon Green fan, so yeah. I know it feels...
You've said that from the beginning.
Yeah, I know that was a little early for Kenyon Green, or it felt like that to people, like maybe he could have gone later. But if you're the Texans drafting right there, and there's nobody that's willing to trade back with you, and you really like Kenyon Green, you take him there. I have my questions with that. Derek Stingley could end up being one of the best players in the entire draft. It's just all about how does he bounce back, how does he come out, and can he stay healthy? So I like what Nick Caserio did. And I think I give him like an A to an A minus so far as a GM, especially, like you said, coming in to a tough situation like that. But I really love what Rafael Stone's done. And it's not just the draft last night. I mean, look at what's happening with the Brooklyn Nets right now. And you think about what those first round picks that he got for James Harden could turn into if the Nets completely fall apart. Kyrie Irving made a list yesterday about trade destinations of where he wants to go, of about like 5 or 6 teams. He wants out. He's going to move on. Kevin Durant says he is monitoring the situation with
Kyrie. The situation.
Yeah, and to see how that's going to go. Yeah. All these teams are starting to clamor, and fan bases are clamoring for Kevin Durant. So there is potential now that we could see Harden's already gone. Kyrie is going to be gone. Kevin Durant could force his way out. And then all of a sudden you have a Brooklyn Nets team that doesn't even have Spencer Dinwiddie or Jared Allen anymore. The Rockets found a way to not get saddled with Jared Allen's $100 million contract, which I love Jared Allen, but when you're a rebuilding team, you don't need Jared Allen, right? They pawned Caris LeVert off on somebody else. So now that trade with the Nets is starting to look even better than it ever did before. His draft last night was an A+. I think it was a masterclass in drafting. He got a lot of really good guys that can fit roles perfectly within this team. I think getting Christian Wood out of the locker room on a rebuilding team with a bunch of young players and getting the 26th pick in the process, which he used last night for the 29th and 2 second-round picks in the future, was great. I still love the hire of Steven Silas. I love Steven Silas as an NBA coach. I know people have made fun of me on here for that before, but
now,
I love
why
Steven
do you like
Silas.
Steven Silas? Because there's a lot of people that have questioned his decision making and what he's done with Rafael Stone's draft picks.
Well, okay, so think about what Rafael Stone's done so far coming into a difficult situation. Steven Silas came into a situation much like Christian Wood and much like Rafael Stone, where he had to come into a situation with a disgruntled James Harden, with a disgruntled Russell Westbrook, and completely start a rebuild from scratch. Steven Silas, he has I have questions about his ability to coach defense, and about I'm going to have questions about the defenses of his teams. But he has been an assistant that was the offensive mastermind of a number one offense in the NBA before. The year before he got signed on as the Rockets head coach, he was with the Mavericks. He was an assistant with the Mavericks under Rick Carlisle. And the Mavericks had the number one offense in the league. I mean, it helped that they have Luka Doncic, but Steven Silas was the mastermind of a system that really worked around Luka. I think there have been questions about the way he's used, about the situation surrounding John Wall, and that's going to continue to be there for both Rafael Stone and Steven Silas. But I think Steven Silas is a guy who can get these offensive-minded players ramped up really quickly to be a competitive team. And so Rafael Stone, has a good coach underneath him. I think he's done a great job of building a team around him. He still needs to figure out what the heck to do with John Wall, but I give him an A+ for what he's done for the Rockets so far. And I think a lot of people, I still feel like he's very underrated for the moves that he's made so far.
Well, when you draft a player from the SEC, as Nick Caserio said, and I think Rafael Stone would say the same thing, you know that they've played against raw talent every week, week in and week out. You know that they've played against the best. And look, I love me some Big Ten basketball. I love me some Big Ten football. But the SEC is different. Yeah. And I think the fact that both of those GMs have gone that direction says a lot about the SEC. Mm-hmm. I also will say that I think they're very different in their approach. But when they talk with the media, they both use the logic. They kind of remove the emotion. And we heard that again from Rafael Stone last night. Sean, what do you think as far as the two GMs, how they match up? Because let's be honest, we don't have to talk much about James Click because the Astros are still doing well.
Yeah, and he's in a very different situation very different. Where he's trying to, you know, maintain the ship, where these guys are had to be kind of charged with the teardown and the rebuild right. at the same time. So I think Stone did a pretty good job this draft. I'm not as, you know, ecstatic about it as Josh. It's not anything like negative. It's just I'm just not as excited for Ty Washington and Tari Eason. Just these later round picks, they're a little different than in the NFL. You get 3, 17, and 26, and you're going to have a great draft. NBA, it's a little bit more of a crapshoot. But I think overall he's done a pretty good job navigating this kind of tough situation, like you said, with the John. So he gets hired, and immediately he has to trade away Russell Westbrook and James Harden. That is a miserable job to do because there's no chance you trade those guys and are going to be anywhere close to competitive for 2 years. And we've seen that. They've had the worst record in the league the last 2 years.
Well, and I was going to say real fast, like at the time, James Harden, everybody's talking about how he's the one of the best offensive players we've ever seen in the NBA. And Rafael Stone's like, I have to trade this guy and find a package that anyone can be happy with?
He had to deal with egos.
Yeah.
He had to deal with egos and a situation that is head-scratching. I love Mike D'Antoni. I think he and his wife are some of the nicest people I've ever met. But between Maury and D'Antoni and Fertitta, it was like James Harden and these players were given carte blanche. Come here. We're going to pay you a lot of money. James, what do you want?
Yeah.
What do you want?
Yeah,
we'll give
it
to
you. Yeah.
We'll continue to give it to you. Oh, and you're not even doing well, but we're going to continue to pamper and rub your feet. And then Rafael Stone is charged with, you know, Tillman finally saying, I'm done. That's it.
Yeah.
They leave, and then Rafael Stone comes in, and they're like, all right, make a winning team out of this. I mean, it's hard to do. So I try to think about that perspective. Nick Caserio, it's a little bit of the same thing, only the people that were given complete control over there, oddly enough. Like, giving James Harden complete control, you can at least justify. Giving Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby complete control was a very odd decision.
Yeah, and just going back to Stone and the Rock, I mean, it is very odd now that I'm thinking about that between Harden and Watson, you probably got off of these guys at the exact right time and you still got pretty good trade value out of it, especially with the Nets going to implode here pretty soon, it looks like. And the hardest part is the John Wall situation, which is like a complete no-win for anyone. The fact that you had to trade Russell Westbrook for someone who made similar money, and so you're just stuck with a guy who can't play, and then when he can play, might not want to play, or at least not want to be that mentor that the Rockets wanted to be coming off the bench, really kind of trying to showcase the young guys, get them reps. He still wants to play for a contender, and that's just not happening with how much money he's making, how he has no proven track record basically the last 3 years.
GMs need time. And the tough thing is that, like, you'll hear any GM of any sport say, you don't know the success of a draft class until at the least 3 years.
Right.
Because you don't know, even if somebody has a good rookie year, which is rare, are they durable? You know, what's the injury report? What, how do they fare with the money and all of the fame? Like, you'll hear any GM say that, but as sports fans, obviously, and as commentators, we're certainly usually not patient. But I like what I've seen so far, and I think both men were good hires.
Yes.
I haven't given a lot of compliments to Cal McNair over the years, but I think that Caserio was a good hire, and it seems like things are on the right track. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we talk a little Astros, plus what the hell is a workable suspension? We're going to address that next.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, it's Vanessa Richardson with Josh Beard today in for Paul Gallant, as Paul is most likely somewhere enjoying himself. We'll leave it at that.
He's fine.
Shit, Paul's always fine.
He's still coherent right now. I have to believe that.
It's early in the morning. You're probably right.
That's true.
Sean Mapes behind the glass for us. What a day it's been on Twitter. If you need some reprieve, feel free to listen to our show where we are talking hashtag sports. And let's talk a little bit about the Astros. Last night was an interesting game. Lots of three-run homers. Bregman, it was nice to see kind of what looked like vintage Alex Bregman. We got that peak of that potential again. Alvarez, no shocker. Stanton for the Yankees. But the Astros were up 6-3 going into the ninth, and then it imploded thanks in large part to Ryan Pressly and a couple of odd decisions. It ended with Aaron Judge walking it off and the Yankees beating the Astros.
Yeah, a disappointing way to start this series against the Yankees. And I want to see from them coming into these next few games is definitely like the biggest thing I want to see from them going into these next few games is to just keep the bats going. Like, just keep the bats going. Like, it was so good to see Bregman feel, it looked like he felt comfortable at the plate. And I want to continue seeing him look like he feels comfortable at the plate. And I definitely would love for them to win the series. If they can take these next three games and then they have the another game after the two games against the Mets. But as long as we get to see progress from some of these guys, like Bregman, Yuli, as long as we get to see progress from them at the plate throughout the rest of this stretch, I think I'm going to be happy. I know it's weird because I was like, oh, definitely, I don't want to split. If we split, I'm not going to be super happy about it. But as long as we're seeing progress at the plate from all these guys and the bats are still going, I mean, losing 7-6 isn't great, but at least you had the six runs.
It
right?
is one
at
least game. You were hitting. I think any loss against the Yankees, because of the state of these two teams and the amount of hate and vitriol, any loss against the Yankees feels like two or three losses. But the bottom line is that they still have three games against these guys. And it wasn't a terrible game. They only lost by one run. It just was very dramatic fashion. And yes, somebody on the text line called him Ryan Stressly. Look, usually he's solid. I would like to see more consistency from him as a closer.
Yeah, what he looked like last night was when Pressly first came into the clubhouse. And he'd go out there, like, you never knew what Ryan Pressly you were going to get on any given night. And he's become more consistent over a period of time, but when he was first with the Astros, it's just like everybody'd start sweating. Astros Twitter would go wild because they're like, oh, okay, all right, which Ryan Pressly are we getting in this game? And you just never knew if you were going to get the guy that can locate, he's making dudes miss, he's staying one step ahead, or the guy who's just struggling to get the ball across the plate like last night. And it's a few shades of old Ryan Pressly, and I would love, that's a huge thing. Be consistent, Pressly. That's all this team needs throughout the rest of the stretch.
I will say that game made me excited for October. I mean, it did, just because if that's the kind of playoff that we could see between the Yankees and Astros, obviously would prefer the Astros to win, but that was a fun game.
I will take being up 6-3 and just one guy having a bad inning to lose the game every single day, because more often than not, you're going to win that game 6-3 going into the ninth, right? Like, how often is Ryan Pressly going to crap the bed so bad that they score four runs in one inning and they end up winning 7-6? Odds say you're winning that game. I don't even know what the Astros win percentage was going into the ninth, up three runs, but I'd have to imagine it was probably high 80%, low 90% minimum. And so more often than not, analytics and statistics say you're going to win that game. So if that's the kind of the competitiveness we're going to see from the Astros bats and the Astros as a whole moving forward, I'm happy with that. I'm not happy with the loss, but I'm happy that they went in the end of the night 6-3. They just have to close it out in that final
inning. Lance McCullers Jr. is going to pitch to hitters during a live BP tomorrow in New York. Obviously, that's a huge step for Lance. He threw curveballs on Thursday during his bullpen for the first time during his rehab process. The Astros pitching is in a pretty good position, yeah, especially their starting position. But I will be able to take a little bit of a deep breath when Odorizzi is back and when Lance McCullers Jr. is back for sure.
Yeah, that's one. That the only issue that they've had on their pitching staff so far this season has just been injuries. I mean, we haven't seen Lance all season, but they've had injuries to their starters. They've had injuries to the bullpen, and so they've had to kind of move some guys around. Stanek's been great lately too. I think he's had a couple of really, really good outings lately, and so the bullpen's been awesome. Presley, before he started dealing with issues, was looking really good to start the season. I want to see him pick it back up. But the starters, there's no issues right now. And if you add Lance McCullers into that rotation, this is one of the better starting pitching staffs in all of Major League Baseball. And you add that to the bullpen that they have. And yes, it makes me very excited for October.
All right. Have you ever heard of a workable suspension? Have you ever heard of somebody getting a say in their own punishment? That, according to Boomer Esiason, who I trust and who is very much in the know, is part of what's happening with the NFL and Deshaun Watson. Here's Boomer on WFAN this morning.
I mean, you know, when I was in the NFL, if you did something wrong, you got suspended. You didn't even have a hearing or anything else. And then I'm hearing that Deshaun Watson, his representatives, the NFLPA, and the NFL are all sitting down trying to come up with some sort of workable suspension for Deshaun Watson.
I mean, come on.
I've never heard of anything so ridiculous in my life.
Get the hell out of here. Workable suspension?
Yeah, something that's workable for everybody.
For everybody.
That's going to satisfy everybody, you mean. Okay. Like 8 weeks.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, the NFL, and I know that they tread very lightly in this area because they've made mistakes before, and now they're trying to spread out the responsibility. So it's not just theirs, that they have engaged with the union. The union and the NFL have picked the person, the Sue L. Robinson, a former federal judge, to sit in judgment of everything that she's been handed. She is the one that's going to make the decision. I don't even know why they had this meeting, because she's the ultimate one that has to decide, you know, how bad is it and what the punishment should be.
I like that Boomer said they're trying to spread responsibility, because that does sound accurate. They involve the neutral arbitrator, the Sue woman, who I'm sure is very qualified. But if they're giving David Mulugeta and Deshaun Watson a say in this, I don't care where you may think Deshaun Watson's totally innocent, good for you, whatever. Nobody should ever be able to have a say, and nobody's agent should have a say in a punishment, period.
Yeah, I mean, Deshaun Watson is so great at spreading responsibility. That sounds so ridiculous, spreading responsibility.
Well, you were saying the NFL.
Right, right. I get that. It's just like, I hate that they're trying to spread the responsibility of these punishments against Deshaun Watson and letting him be one of the people it's ridiculous. We know what happened. He had 24 allegations against him. We have a precedent for punishment for allegations like that, even if they're settled, right? And a year is the absolute minimum he should get. If that's the workable solution, okay, that sounds like a workable solution to me. But there shouldn't, if it's between the NFL and the NFLPA, I get it. The union has to look out for the players. They can't have crazy precedent set for guys moving forward. They want to make sure they protect their players. Part of me contends, I don't know, if you ever have another guy that has 24 sexual assault allegations against him and he has to settle those out of court, that's probably not a guy you want to defend in the first place, but whatever, I get it. But if it's between the NFL and the union, that's fine. If Deshaun Watson and David Mulugeta really are a part of these discussions for a workable solution, that is so wildly problematic, it's not even funny. That sets a precedent that could be worse than... When I was a kid, I never got to. I wish I would have been able to find a workable solution to my punishments. I wish I could have negotiated with my parents.
Can you imagine your parents being like, "Yeah, what do you think your punishment should be?" That's probably that new age parenting where people are like really gentle with their kids and are anti spank and all that. But that's stunning to me. If this is true, I do trust what Boomer Esiason says, because he seems to be in the know for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't think, regardless of whether you think Deshaun Watson is guilty or not, that he should ever have a say, or David Mulugeta should be negotiating with Roger Goodell. It comes down to Roger Goodell being scared, if that's the case. Scared of David Mulugeta. Scared of the fact that they promised this guy $230 million, so they need him on the field.
Yeah, but Roger Goodell is afraid of a lot because he's not in control. And when you're not in control, you have a lot to fear, because if he does something that sets a precedent that these NFL owners don't like, that could endanger their teams or could set the teams up for failure moving forward. And if he takes one wrong misstep, he could be out as the commissioner. Now, so his job has always been, I'm going to do what's best for the owners, because doing what's best for the owners is what's best for me. He's Smee from the movie Hook. That's what he is. He's Smee.
Good movie, by the way.
The owners are Captain Hook.
Solid 90s movie.
And look, David Mulugeta, the owners, the Browns, are just essentially sitting there going, stop me, Smee. Don't stop me, Smee. And Roger Goodell doesn't know what to do right now.
People think that Roger Goodell runs the show. He is literally an employee of the NFL owners. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But I certainly never agree with somebody, even in this age of player empowerment, being able to help name their punishment. All right, coming up, Josh was shocked that this certain player was passed on by an NBA franchise. We're going to talk about that, as well as players that you were shocked went later than they did in drafts. That's next.
ESPN 97.5. Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, we're rolling along on a Friday. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Josh Beard is in for Paul Gallant. Sean Mapes behind the glass, as always. You had an interesting topic that you brought up. I'm a big fan of this player, Jaden Ivey.
Yeah.
Watched him play, obviously, at Purdue. His mom played for the Indiana Fever, is the head coach at Notre Dame now for women's basketball. I was surprised that he went as late as he did. You were surprised the Kings passed on him.
Oh, my. It's just, I literally said yesterday that if there's any luck, this is why I don't gamble, guys. I'm bad luck. Okay.
At least you're self-aware. There are people like Phil Mickelson that are not and are in debt.
I would, if I started, I would be a degenerate and I would lose everything because I am bad luck. When I invest in crypto, that crypto goes down. When I invest in stocks, those stocks go down. It happens every time. I don't do it. It's a mistake for me. I literally said yesterday, if there's any lock in the draft, I should have thought about who was drafting for. It's a stupid job by me. If there's any lock for a guy to get picked in the draft.
Yeah, the Kings are not known for good draft picks.
It was Jaden Ivey to go number four. And the Kings passed on him for Keegan Murray. I didn't know. Brendan came in earlier to work on some stuff, and he told us that apparently the Kings took Keegan Murray because the Detroit Pistons GM started talking up Keegan Murray this last week because the Kings kind of liked him.
Which was a total mind game,
by the way. Oh, yeah, it's great. I love hearing mind game manipulations by GMs like that. And then all of a sudden, Detroit oopsies into Jaden Ivey. They go and make a trade to get Jalen Duren, move back in, get Jalen Duren, and now they've added Jalen Duren and Jaden Ivey to a team with Cade Cunningham. You talk about, like, exciting young backcourts in the NBA.
Great day for Detroit. Yeah. They had a graphic on ESPN that I loved called One Pick Away from Greatness, Notable Kings Lottery Picks. So in 11, they took Fredette over Klay Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
12, they took Robinson over Lillard. 18, they took Bagley the third over Doncic.
So, yeah.
And these were all consecutive, by the way. So they took Fredette at 10 instead of, and then Klay Thompson went 11. Robinson went at 5. Lillard went 6. Bagley went at 2. Doncic went 3.
The only good
draft
pick.
So they are notorious for this.
Right. And the only good draft pick they've made, it was De'Aaron Fox. And now there's rumors that De'Aaron Fox may not want to stay there long term. And so the Kings just, they're a poverty franchise that continues to make poverty franchise moves.
Because, and it's sad because that could be a cool market to play in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Jaden Ivey's NBA comparisons from, and this wasn't just one NBA scout or scouting site or analyst. Everybody was saying his comparisons, his NBA comps are Donovan Mitchell and Ja Morant. The only reason he didn't go in the top three is because of the skill sets, the size, and the versatility of Jabari Smith, Paolo Banchero, and Chet Holmgren. Although I contend Jaden Ivey should have gone above Chet Holmgren, if I'm being completely honest. The fact that he went fifth to Detroit is so cool, and that I didn't even know that he has so many ties to the city of Detroit.
Yeah, I saw this on Twitter. So his grandpa, his paternal grandpa, played for the Detroit Lions. His dad, I believe, grew up in the Detroit area because his grandpa was playing for the Lions. And then his mom played for the Detroit Shock for a while. Now, his mom, I remember his mom playing for the Indiana Fever, but a lot of ties to Detroit. So when people are like, oh, he's crying because he doesn't want to go to Detroit, I think he's probably crying because he's happy to be in Detroit. It's one of his kind of quote-unquote homes where he has a lot of history.
I actually thought it was cool to see him crying, right? Like, I love seeing that emotion from guys. Like, that shows passion. That
his
shows
dad
happiness.
Is Javon Hunter, by the way.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, actually. I like that emotion from everybody. Like, all these guys walk up and they act like they're too cool. I almost said another dad phrase. They act like they're too cool for school.
Josh is great with up the dad phrases. Yeah, phrases, guys.
I was good
earlier
with the dad phrases before,
guys,
I was
Josh
a dad.
Josh said bum. Dumb,
I said
dumb.
Dumb, dumb.
He called someone a dumb,
He's
dumb.
He called somebody a dumb, dumb.
It was better than what I wanted to say. I'm just being honest. Yes. But
I think you wanted to say
no,
dumb, dumb.
No,
I think the dad and you. Your kids are at VBS. You wanted to say dumb, dumb.
That's
okay.
True. They are, yeah.
But shout out to VBS. I loved VBS, by the way.
I love seeing that emotion from Jaden Ivey.
Me
and
too.
Now he gets to go. It's not even that. I would have been crying and be like, I get to play with Cade Cunningham. Like,
right?
That's incredible.
Sean, you had a thought.
Yeah, and not to mention that, like we mentioned, he doesn't have to play in Sacramento.
Right.
And there's a theme with Sacramento draft picks coming right before All-NBA, All-Star level players. So in the 2018 draft, they drafted Marvin Bagley, number two.
Didn't I just read this?
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, I stepped out to talk to the intern.
I read it on air. But your point remains.
Yeah.
There was the graphic on ESPN last night that I saw.
That I was reading off of.
I think Sean was just trying to, he was just trying to amplify the point.
Just
I think
to
it's just,
my
yeah,
opinion.
He was just trying to
you know,
support
it was a
your
reset.
Opinion.
It was a
yeah,
reset.
It was a, it was a
I'm Vanessa
reset.
Richardson. You're listening to 97.5.
90-second long reset.
Here's another guy, too, you know, because Jaden Ivey, and you put in the Twitch chat.
Yeah,
who's
and I do want to know that, by the way. And it can be any sport. Who's a player that you were surprised went as late as they did?
The one for me specifically in this draft, and I know I'm gonna get clowned for this because people are gonna be like, oh, Josh loves the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks had a really good pick. They moved back into the draft. They got the 37th pick and they drafted a guy named Jalen Hardy. And a lot of people forget who Jalen Hardy is. He missed a lot of, or I think all of his senior year of high school because of COVID and the COVID shutdowns. And then he opted not to go play college basketball because he wanted to go play for the G League Ignite. Jalen Hardy was the number two prospect coming out of high school behind Chet Holmgren in 2021. He averaged 30 points per game in high school his junior year. I think it was like 30 points, 8 rebounds, 9 assists per game. The guy's like 6'4". He's wildly athletic. He's not he wasn't the most efficient scorer last year with G League Ignite, but it was only 24 games, a small sample size. A guy who's playing against NBA level or close to NBA level talent who was expected to come in and immediately start on that team, but he was scoring at NBA levels. Like the guy came in and was a monster for G League Ignite. He has such an amazing offensive skill set. He's a good, willing defender. He's got great length. He's really fast, plays passing lanes well. He should have gone in the first round. Almost every NBA scout had him as a first round talent. I saw multiple mocks where he was going to the Spurs at 20. I was like, of course the Spurs would get him at number 20. But he ends up falling to 37th. And talk about new GMs who are building cultures.
Right.
Nico Harrison did a great job to go and get him. I'm surprised. So many other teams should have made the
same. Aaron Rodgers is a good one as well.
Yes. Aaron Rodgers is a great one.
Across different sports. What about you, Sean?
The one I remember, I was watching the 2018 NFL draft, and around pick 10 and 11 with Arizona and Miami, every time Roger Goodell walk up and he say the pick, I would right before he says the name, I'd go, Lamar Jackson?
Yeah.
And then I did that for about another hour and a half because he went the last pick of the first round to the Ravens. But as I was watching, I was like, do people forget that Lamar Jackson's in this draft? Like, did they draft him and I missed it? Like, I missed Vanessa's great point about the Sacramento Kings.
Thank you. His mom was the one that was like, I need, you know, because his mom is his agent, was the one that was like, I need these teams to understand that he's playing quarterback. And I always thought that had something to do with it, that teams knew that right. they can't manipulate Mama the way that they can manipulate other agents. And I will say this, Mama knew best.
Yeah, yeah.
Lamar, indeed, a quarterback. Another, that's a great one, Sean.
Another recent one from this last NFL draft, my bias is coming through. I hate this. Isaiah Spiller, I can't believe he fell as far as he did.
Oh my God! Do you like the Aggies or something?
Maybe a little bit. His burst rate, his breakout run rate, his average yards. He was great. He was a great pass catcher, even though everybody's like he can't really catch. He's a good blocker out of the backfield. The fact that he fell as far as he did in this last draft was ridiculous. And the Chargers got a huge, huge steal in Isaiah Spiller.
There are a lot of people that say things like Tom Brady or whatever, but at the time,
right.
it didn't seem like Tom Brady was being drafted super late. Our topic here is like, what at the time were you like, what the hell? That's super, super late. All right, coming up, we're going to put a bow on a Friday and a great week. We're going to do our garbage time segment. That's next.
ESPN 97.5. Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, Vanessa Richardson and Josh Beard with Sean Mapes today finishing it out for you. We have a call. We have Eric on the line who wants to talk about Deshaun's potential NFL suspension. Hello, Eric.
Hey, guys. How are y'all doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. I just want to call because, the NFL is very hypocritical. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, Zeke got hit with an 8-game suspension, and the girl even admitted she lied. And then we got Deshaun Watson sexually assaulting all these ladies. And because it's the Cleveland Browns, I think the NFL would do anything just to help them. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thanks, Eric. Yeah, I don't think you're far off as far as the NFL being invested in Deshaun Watson's success, not only because of the amount of money that he got, but I think that they know that all eyes are on how they handle this case. I've heard two theories. I've heard that it could help Deshaun Watson that the NFL has handled things so poorly, and I've heard that it could hurt Deshaun Watson because they've handled other things so poorly because they'll quote-unquote want to make an example out of him.
Yeah.
Either way, Boomer Esiason on WFAN this morning saying that Deshaun's agents and whatnot are involved in the suspension process is just a very odd thing.
Yeah, and maybe that's where I haven't really thought about that side from the NFL where, like, do you want to continue to make one of your properties just abjectly horrible?
Right.
Right. And conversely, do you want to help the franchise that we don't know to the extent that the Texans knew about what was happening with Deshaun Watson, but we do know they helped him get the NDAs. We do know that they helped him get a room at the Houstonian, and a lot of that mess had to be cleaned up and taken care of. So do you want to reward the Texans by giving a long suspension? Do you want to reward the Texans who might have been a part of this and might have helped Deshaun Watson in a way, maybe not without knowing all the information? Because if the Browns are bad for a whole year, that's great for the Texans and the draft pick that they got from Cleveland, right? And so do you want to hurt the Browns and kind of destroy them a little bit while helping the Texans who might have been, like, indirectly complicit in some of the stuff that Deshaun was doing? Or do you want to set Deshaun Watson as the example? I haven't thought about the other side of it because I'm staunchly in the make an example of Deshaun Watson
yeah.
camp.
He's, why is that?
He is the one that's ultimately responsible for everything that happened. Like, yes, the Browns are a little gross for giving him the contract that they gave him, especially the way they worked it out. It doesn't feel right, but the Browns are an organization that are full of people that have jobs. They need to win to make more money so they can pay those people their salaries, right? Like, the Browns aren't hurting for money, but
no NFL team is.
Right, they're a company, and companies all over the place make horrible decisions to hire horrible people in every industry, in the movie industry, in the gaming industry. Mm-hmm. Corporations themselves don't care about what people do, right?
I think that if there's one thing that a positive, I hate to use the term positive, that can be taken away from the Deshaun Watson situation, I really hope that young athletes watch what they do. Watch who they surround themselves with.
Yeah.
If you remember when this thing first happened, he put out a statement that did not end up helping him. He had people in his corner that were leaking things to the media members. I know that for a fact. I hope athletes learn who they surround themselves with matters.
Right.
The things that they do behind closed doors literally matters. Because, again, I've always said I hope the truth comes out. I hope whatever it is. I'm not going to say what I think the truth is because I'm not going to do that. But whatever the truth is, I hope it comes out, and I hope young athletes can learn that how they behave themselves, making themselves and putting themselves in vulnerable situations,
right,
or women in vulnerable situations, it doesn't fly anymore.
Well, what's weird is when Deshaun Watson posted those videos, or when those videos of Deshaun Watson with Mia Khalifa were posted, I jokingly said, "Oh, that's a red flag." Oh, and there was a little part of me that's like, like he's publicly posting that he's hanging out with Mia Khalifa, which more power to him, right?
She's
an attractive woman. Yes, she was in the adult. She used to be in the adult film industry.
That's right.
She has like two or three degrees, wildly intelligent. She did it for a while. Now she does other things. She streams. She's been successful in other areas. But
Paul would hate her.
Deshaun Watson posting those videos at that time, when he was still pretty new in the league, just felt like a little off. And I jokingly said, "Oh, red flag to Deshaun Watson." It's kind of interesting to look back on that now and be like, should we see? But that goes back to the young player. Be careful what you're doing, what you're posting, what you're putting out there,
well,
how
you know
you're
what
behaving,
people
who
have
you're
said
around.
Also, that's not a terrible point is, you know, Robert Kraft versus Deshaun Watson. Why did we just let what Robert Kraft did slip beneath the cracks?
Right.
There is an element there, too, not to play devil's advocate, but it's a very nuanced discussion.
Yes.
But we'll turn the mood a little bit lighter as it is time for garbage time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
Could you use an extra $10,000 a month?
Yes, absolutely.
Instantly. I think most of us could. And there is a woman in North Carolina who has found a way to do that. Her name is Rebecca Blue. And she makes an extra $10,000 a month by selling her random waste. By this, I mean selling items such as used bathwater, contraceptive oil, armpit hair, used earbuds, and even toenail clippings. This is per the New York Post. The savvy 28-year-old charges between $98 and $356 for personal rubbish. There are some men that are into weird stuff, and she takes advantage of it.
I think so gross.
I think every woman should be doing, or maybe not every woman, but I think every woman who has this on the table, like you're leaving money on the table if you're not doing this.
How do you maintain integrity while still putting your armpit hair into a bag? That's the issue I would have. Like, I don't know that I could put my toenail clippings and mail it to Jerry Smith in Albuquerque and still feel like a woman with respect.
That is a phrase I did not have on my bingo card of what Vanessa would say to me this week.
It's a nice cut right there.
How do you maintain integrity while putting your armpit hair in a baggie? I don't know that. Well, you know what helps? All the money that comes from it.
That's how you do it.
More power to this woman for doing this. If anybody wanted my toenail clippings or my armpit hair, you better believe I'd be sending it off in a heartbeat. Maintain integrity. Hey, you don't have to maintain it if you don't have it.
So you don't think she's a dum-dum?
No, I don't think she's a dum-dum. But I'm not one for kink shaming, but this is kind of gross and disgusting, right?
It's a bit much. Has it ever made... Do you notice when your wife gets a haircut?
Absolutely, yes.
Oh, nice. What about Sean? I know you're not married, but when you've dated women, do you try to notice and all that?
Yeah. You have to be kind of a dum-dum not to notice.
I don't like where we're going with this.
A suspicious wife who was angered by her husband's fresh haircut has filed for divorce. Rebecca Cannon was arrested this past Saturday. It was her third arrest. Violence against her husband. She was angered on June 13th when she and her children arrived home. She became suspicious because her husband had a fresh haircut and was planning to go to dinner at Bonefish Grill. So she got violent with him, threw his phone in a toilet because she thought a fresh haircut meant he was doing some cheating.
Well, look, as a married man, if I went and got a fresh haircut and said, by the way, I'm going to a dinner at Bonefish Grill, like let's say McCormick and Schmick's, like I've got a haircut, I'm going to dinner at McCormick and Schmick's, I'll be home later. Like, I expect my wife to think something. Neither of us make a move without knowing what's going on with the other one. And if anything like that happened with one of the two of us, where it's like, I just randomly got a haircut, I smelled nice, I like if I started losing like weight and I was going out all, but like even those little things like that, I think my wife, maybe not violent per se, she'd leave marks that wouldn't be seen. It'd be all be emotional damage, right?
I will say this. It's annoying when you have to tell your parents that they're right. And my dad, God rest his soul, used to say that whenever somebody in a couple, one member of a couple loses a lot of weight, that divorce soon follows. And I had a boss that happened with, and you better believe a divorce soon followed. And you do see that a lot. Somebody starts looking really nice, starts having a little more pep in their step. They start smelling great. They just have a new lease on life, and all of a sudden the marriage is
They're
over.
Looking around like, I'm in AAA. I should be going to the majors.
That's why I like to keep myself in a nice slobbish, slovenly form so my wife knows that I love her and I'm devoted
you should,
to her.
You should tell your wife, this is for our marriage.
This is for you.
Weirdly, she lost a lot of weight lately, so I'm feeling very confident. I'm just kidding. She's
John?
Never had to lose weight. She looks incredible.
It's not Josh, it's John.
It's John. I'm John Beard now.
That's
where the John Beard came from. I should have known.
An OnlyFans couple. I will tell you before I read the story, I think this is for publicity, okay? But an OnlyFans couple who have been dating for 2 years, it's two women, think that they're half-sisters. Carly and Mercedes, the name Mercedes says enough, revealed they may be half-siblings after finding out their mothers had relations with the same man. Their OnlyFans account is the handle at Not Your Average Sisters. And they said that they found out that their moms hooked up with the same guy, so they think they may be half-sisters. I think that since they have an OnlyFans account, that this is a ploy.
They look really similar, though. I just pulled up the picture on Twitter, and they... And maybe it's because they know they look similar, so maybe they're doing this for publicity. Look, man, if I had an audience that would want to see it, I'd have an OnlyFans in a heartbeat. I think I'd be very popular in specific communities. Yeah. I would do it. But I don't think my wife would like that. That would be cause for violence.
Absolutely.
She'd see the fresh haircut and be like, okay, I'm going upstairs to start filming.
She'd say, you dum-dum.
She'd be like, wait, you don't have a Twitch stream scheduled today. I know. And then she would, she'd call me a dum-dum and she'd throw my phone at me. But these women look very similar.
Very odd. You never know what people do for attention.
Personal story kind of in the same vein as that. My wife and I found out about a few years ago that we might be related. And we've been married for a really long time. We were so worried about it because her grandma, just on the off chance, she's like, I actually have some family with the last name Beard in Tennessee and East Texas. I was like, oh no, I have family in Tennessee and East Texas. We dug down the family tree. And it's by marriage. There's no blood relation. So it's like one of her aunts or one of her nieces is like, one of her aunts is married to somebody with the last name Beard, but there's no blood relation.
One of my mom's
It was scary.
Cousins.
I had never been more nervous on air. I thought you were going to.
It was the worst.
Cousins married a third cousin. So it happens.
It happens. Like sometimes you accidentally marry a cousin.
Does it happen?
In Indiana, small farming communities. Okay. Absolutely.
We had been married for, at that point, we had been married for like 13, 14 years. We have two kids.
Yeah.
Our kids are both intelligent and smart.
And you know it's not that close, even if it is, but still disturbing. Last story. A man in Japan, this is really disturbing, went out for drinks, got really drunk, lost a USB flash drive on the streets of Japan that contained the personal details of every resident of a certain city northwest of Osaka. The man in his 40s fell asleep on the street after drinking alcohol. When he woke up, the bag containing the flash drive, which had information varying from benefits to tax-exempt households, the city's government, etc. Drinks after work. Maybe don't have a flash drive that has everybody's tax information on it.
Why are you walking around with that thing? Unless you're Schmidt from New Girl and you have all of your plans on your USB drive, you don't need to be walking around with a USB drive. Amazing show.
USB drive. Also, who has a USB drive anymore? Shame on this car, man. Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
All right. That's been another episode of Vanessa and Gallant. We appreciate Josh Beard being here.
Josh
Beard. I called him John yesterday. And he will be here next week as well. For Josh, Sean, myself, have a great day. You got the Killer Bees up next.